The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Whoops. Hold on. All right. I don't know why this is not working. Oh, man. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. Okay. Well, I guess I can't play that one. Let's see if it'll let me play this one. No. All right. Well, maybe if I do this and this. I'm screwed. Never mind. Best laid plans. I'm sorry. Well, here, I talk about screwing up the beginning of a show. Hey, for some reason, I was, and now I have no audio here. Oh, my God. I should give up. Hello. Try it this way. Now this way. Do we have audio? Okay, there we go. Hi, we should start over again. Best laid plans and all. I had a great video that I was going to play for you at the beginning of the show, and unfortunately, the feedback issues. Let me try it one more time, because you know what? It's already screwed up, so I can't make it much worse, can I? Let's try it again. Nope. Oh, well, I changed nothing in the settings, but it won't work. So anyway, I've got no comedy bit for you. And I wish I did, because I'm not in a very funny mood. First, I have to apologize for not being here yesterday. How do I start? The world sometimes is too much for me. To state the obvious, I suffer from depression. I had a really bad year last year, and I know a lot of us did. Oh, the audio is not, it's not on your end. It was a problem with my end. It's fixed. Just bear with it a second. But there's a delay, so you didn't hear me say that. Anyway, sorry about the technical problems at the beginning. As to yesterday, going back about a year, well, let's go back to November of 2016. When Donald Trump won the presidency, it hit me like it hit millions of Americans, actually millions of earthlings around the world, like a punch to the gut. I couldn't believe that that this country elected an imbecile. I mean, probably the least qualified person, I'll put it out there, to ever run for the presidency. Now, I'm not a historian. I couldn't tell you everyone who's ever run for the presidency. But I would say Donald Trump was the worst person imaginable to ever be put in that office. First of all, he's got the mental acuity of a second grader. And that's, you know, an insult to the second graders. He's a fucking moron who has no business being anywhere near the Oval Office, let alone sitting at the desk there. And hearing him spout off his bullshit opinions that are based on nothing. Look, I've got opinions, and I'm sure many of them are bullshit to a lot of people, even people who regularly listen to me. But at least when I form an opinion, I try to have it based in fact. My opinions are based on news or something that I read, not some ramblings of a propaganda TV outlet, which seems to be how Donald Trump gets his ideas. So anyway, after he was elected, I think I went through the, you know, the stages of grief, the anger, denial, depression. I can't remember the five of them, but you know them, the five, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the five stages of anger, denial, depression, anger, and acceptance, I think is how it goes. The movie All That Jazz really puts those, the five parts of grief into perspective. Great movie. If you've never seen it, it's one worth, you know, finding on YouTube or one of the streaming services and watching it. But anyway, I went through it. I don't think I ever reached the acceptance part. I had been hovering between the anger, denial, depression, and going through that. But depression is something that I've dealt with since adolescence. And there are times in our lives when things are going well. I should just make it about me, and sorry to make this about me. You know, if you want, tune out, come back in about 20 minutes. I'll be long over this by now, by then, I promise. But Howie Klein will be here, and then, you know, you can listen to Howie, and we'll get off this. I just feel like I owe you an explanation of what's been going on, because I'm really not well. I am working on it, though. So, yes, I take, you know, I've been taking antidepressants, and throughout the years I've had them change to, you know, to because they lose effectiveness after a while and whatever. Anyway, so actually I found one that was working. It was actually working well, because I went through, if you've been listening for a while, I went through a, if you think I'm bad today, about a year ago, not even a year ago, for over a year, I would walk into the studio. I get, this is something I've done for 40 years. I've been in radio for 40 years. And it usually is sort of second nature to me. But I would walk in the studio and just be shaking, be a nervous wreck, thinking I had nothing to say, had no way to say it. And I think it was one of the medications I was on just totally just zombied me out. I had nothing to offer. I had nothing to say to anyone. So I got off of that. I got off of the antidepressant that wasn't working. During that time, I lost about 40 pounds, which I didn't mind at the time. It was, you know, the one good side effect to it all. You know, I wasn't just, I had no appetite. I wasn't thinking straight. I couldn't talk. I really, you know, it was not having a good go of it. And I think the medication, one of them, actually something called Abilify, really fucked me up even more. So changed the medications, and actually, it started working. I started feeling better. I was getting back to my old self. And of course, I put back on all the weight I lost. But that was okay. I could deal with that. Except with these antidepressants come horrible side effects. And the one that was the deal breaker was the constipation. You know, when you go on about 3 weeks without being able to take a shit, things get pretty bad. Sorry to be so blunt, but I'm just trying to explain to you why I'm back in this place again. So tried everything. And so now we're weaned off of that medication. I'm having bowel movements again, if that's any consolation. But starting on a new old medication again, which hasn't kicked in, and it has me a mess. And it's not only that. I mean, it all goes, you know, nothing is absolute on its own. And I do believe that a lot of my depression, which is organic, which has been with me for decades, is situational. And, you know, no secret to the fact that we're having money problems. And it's depressing when you reach a certain age. I turned 59 in November. And as I said, I've been doing radio for 40 years. I'm usually a pro. On this show, I've had a few little breakdowns, but you know, I've come through a lengthy career pretty much fairly unscathed, at least in the professional sense of it. The problem is that at my age, I can't get a job anywhere. And it's not that I want to leave you. It's just, to be honest, and some of you are so generous, and I can't thank you enough. This is how I earn my living. I do this show every day, and I try to usually make it entertaining and informative. You know, as I've told you many times, I set it up to be sort of like the public radio model, where it's voluntary. If you can afford to contribute and you listen to the show and enjoy it, I hope you will. But I won't. I refuse to put the show behind a paywall because I know that so many people who listen are in the same boat I'm in. I'm still hurting from 2008. Back right before the big crash, I was doing mornings on the then progressive talk station here in Miami. I had just beaten the right wing talk station, the big Clear Channel talker. We were the ugly stepchild for the first time when they fired me to make way to flip the station to be the fourth sports talk station in town. Then I went to Air America. They used me for fill-in, and then they hired me actually to host a late night show, and then they went off the air. And I moved online. It'll be 10 years in January. It was just over 9 years ago that happened. It's been a struggle. I mean, I've had some times in my life when I've been very successful. When I adopted my daughter, do you think I would have flown halfway around the world to Kazakhstan and adopted a child on my own as a single woman if I didn't think I could support her? I had no reason to believe that, my whole industry would fall apart, which it did, thanks to consolidation and ownership. You know, one company owning hundreds of radio stations and consolidating jobs and such. It's the way of the world. Consolidation and automation, as we talked with Andrew Yang about last week, have cost a lot of jobs. But one thing I never counted on was getting old. I was always the youngest one. Being born in November, I was, the young one. I'm sort of aged out of an industry that doesn't value experience. I guess they do for, a few people at the top, and then they hire younger, inexperienced people that they don't have to pay very much. Little do they know, they wouldn't have to pay me very much. I don't make very much. So what happened was a couple of weeks ago, there were a few jobs, radio jobs in South Florida. I saw posted that I was not only qualified for, I was mega qualified for. And to my dismay, after doing the official applying through the official route and going through back channels and sending emails, I couldn't even get an acknowledgement that I had applied for a job or inquired about a job, let alone an interview, which made me feel really worthless. It just sucks. It really sucks. So I've been sort of having a pity party. I think it's a combination of the situation and, feeling sorry for myself and knowing that as we get older, society doesn't value us anymore. And I guess I'd always known that, but when it hits you, smacks you in the face, and you're suffering from depression, it comes down harder. So that's where I'm at. And I follow the news, and it gets me even more depressed. I mean, Howard Schultz, are you kidding me? I really don't think the Democrats need to worry because the guy's got the charisma of a dead tree stump. What's really disconcerting is the way the Democrats are eating their own. People are still declaring their candidacy. Some of them we're going to like. Some of them we're not going to like. But it seems like the Hillary-Bernie chasm has only widened. I just saw something, got a laugh, tweeted something. Let me see if I can if I can find it. Let's see. Laffy, she said, it was about Steve Schmidt. MSNBC, after Steve Schmidt admitted that he's, advising Howard Schultz on his campaign and he's really going after the Democrats, MSNBC dumped him as a contributor. And so Laffy posted about it. And of course, people started attacking her for, say, accusing her of being a big Steve Schmidt supporter, which she wasn't. So she tweeted, "I'm also sick of people calling me a hypocrite, falsely accusing me of gullibility and supporting Schmidt. I've always said I loved his rants about Trump, but that nothing has changed his ideology. I'm amazed and offended that people read into things, see things that aren't there." And I mentioned that one time, I pointed out on Twitter in a thread with Laffy that Schmidt was responsible for giving us Sarah Palin. And one of her followers, who was somebody who was I can't remember what she was, like a professor, somebody, a woman who I had respected up to that point, blocked me because I dared to say that Steve Schmidt was responsible for bringing us Sarah Palin. And Laffy responded with FFS. And when I brought up Bernie's tax proposal today, I immediately got two Bernie bashers. This is the way we're going to lose. This is how this is how we're going to lose. If we can't support who we like without tearing down everybody else, then we're fucked. And look, I'm guilty too. I think that Tulsi Gabbard is a joke at running for president. Apparently the people who work for her do too, because she blew her rollout, her announcement. The more I read about Kamala Harris, the less impressed I am. But I believe in doing research and finding out everything I can about the candidates who are running before I make my final decision on who I'm going to vote for. And knowing what's at stake, I will vote for the candidate I feel most connected to in the primary. And then in the general, I will, if I have to, like I did last time, hold my nose and vote against fucking Donald Trump. That's if we make it to November 3rd, 2020. And at this point, I'm not sure we're going to. Now, maybe that's the depression in me talking, but it's also watching the news. I just can't believe the world we're living in. Donald Trump now considers former, I even hate to say, GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain, none for the Federal Reserve. Are you fucking kidding me? This guy, it's the only people that he knows that he calls on. The only people who will still take his calls it's unbelievable. And while we're here sniping at one another, Bernie's not a Democrat. Kamala Harris fucked Willie Brown 30 years ago. Shut the fuck up already. Go to bat for your candidate. Great. But you don't have to tear down everybody else. Go against the Republicans. We are at, this is war. This is our future. This is the difference between living in a bullshit kind of democracy or democratic republic we live in now, or descending into full-blown fascism because we're this far away. So yes, if I'm depressed, there are days that I just don't want to get out of bed. I wish I could, do a job where I could get paid a salary again and get benefits and not have to worry about, my health insurance. And oh my God, listener Carol, who came to the rescue and heard me talk with Laffy the other day about the new deductible kicking in. So the patches that I wear at night that control the restless leg syndrome keep me awake, will now go up to $600 a month until I meet my deductible. Well, Carol stepped up and said, I want to take care of your deductible for you. There are so many really good people out there. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate everyone who has supported me and this show. And And if you can't afford to support me monetarily, I still hope that you want to listen. I hope that I can get through enough of this shit that fucks me up on a daily basis to get through an hour a day to put on a, you know, informational, entertaining program. I try. There are some days like yesterday I just couldn't do it. And days like today when I probably shouldn't, but I felt like I owed you an explanation. And then there was the guy who sent me a donation a couple of weeks ago, but he said, please don't ever take off on a Thursday again because we miss Howie Klein. So Howie's here. I'm going to take a break. I'm not going to do What's News Live because I need to get my shit together again. I really apologize for this. I'm sorry for losing it. I should be better than this. But I had to be honest with you about what I've been going through. And I know it's not just me. But, you know, the last thing I'll say about depression is it's a medical condition. It's something that so many of us suffer, and we suffer in silence. I will hide myself in the back corner of a room and shut the door and turn off the lights and cry so that other people don't see it. But there are times that, you know, obviously you can't hide it. So, okay, we're here. We're still alive. The Democrats took back the House and Nancy Pelosi is holding tight, firm. She said today there won't be any money for a wall. She's stronger than I realized. And for that, I'm grateful. And I guess that's, you know, the best I could do at this point. And what we can all do is count blessings, I suppose, and try to focus on the positive. I tell myself these things. Anyway, I really apologize for the way this show started. And I thank you for bearing with me. All right. We'll take a break for What's News and come back on the other side with Howie Klein. And you'll see, you won't even know that I've been upset. Yeah. No, I can hide it. She said, we'll be right back.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Donald Trump is reportedly still seething over Tuesday's testimony of the nation's intelligence chiefs at an annual congressional hearing on global security threats.
We know the president was angry because you can tell just from the tweets he sent around 6 a.m. as he watched the highlights, essentially, of those intelligence chiefs testifying on Capitol Hill. But what's new tonight is we're learning that the president singled out the director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, specifically during his morning rant about that coverage of what had transpired yesterday. Now, he didn't name Dan Coats in those tweets this morning, but according to two people familiar with what the president said today, he was going after Dan Coats specifically and was very angry about the snippets of the interview that aired where Dan Coats was saying that it's unlikely that North Korea would ever give up its nuclear weapons. Now, that goes against what the president has said. He knows what Dan Coats' feelings on that are because Dan Coats is part of that intelligence briefing that the president gets regularly. But what we're told is the president was more frustrated by the coverage here. Those TV chyrons, those newspaper headlines that said the intelligence chiefs had contradicted him on this.
Trump showed his ire and his ignorance on Twitter Wednesday morning, tweeting, "The intelligence people seem to be extremely passive and naive when it comes to the dangers of Iran. They are wrong. When I became president, Iran was making trouble all over the Middle East and beyond. Since ending the terrible Iran nuclear deal, they are much different, but a source of potential danger and conflict. There, T-H-E-R-E, their economy is now crashing, which is the only thing holding them back. Be careful of Iran. Perhaps intelligence should go back to school."
In response to Trump's incredible missive, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer wrote a letter to the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, imploring him to do the impossible and educate the president.
Senator Schumer's letter to Director Coats says, "President Trump's criticisms of the testimony you and the other intelligence leaders provided to Congress yesterday was extraordinarily inappropriate and will undermine public confidence in the U.S. government's efforts to protect our national security and preserve U.S. power and influence abroad. I believe it is incumbent on you, Director Wray and Director Haspel, to insist on an immediate meeting with the president to educate him about the facts and raw intelligence underlying the intelligence community assessments, and to impress upon him how critically important it is for him to join you and the leadership of our intelligence community in speaking with a unified, accurate voice about national security threats. He is putting your colleagues in an untenable position and hurting the national interest in the process. You must find a way to make that clear to him. Educate him. In other words, do the impossible. Do what no one has ever been able to do.
Senate Democrats introduced a bill Wednesday that, among other things, would make Election Day a federal holiday. But on the Senate floor, Mitch McConnell balked at the idea, admitting that if it were, Republicans would lose elections. MSNBC's Chris Hayes explains.
Mitch McConnell is pretty upset that Democrats are trying to make it easier for people to vote. First piece of legislation House Democrats have introduced, H.R. 1, would simplify voter registration, reform gerrymandering, and create a federal holiday for Election Day, among other provisions. McConnell has already written a very angry op-ed about this horrible offense, and today he took to the floor to continue hammering on the theme.
Just what America needs, another paid holiday and a bunch of government workers being paid to go out and work, I assume our folks on our colleagues on the other side, on their campaigns. This is the Democrat plan to restore democracy?
Ah, yes. What could be worse than giving people a day off on Election Day so they can vote? How nefarious.
At the risk of being redundant, it's cold out there. Thanks to a breakdown in the polar vortex, the Midwest is being flooded with record cold air. Chicago hit its all-time record low of 27 below zero. At least 10 deaths are linked to the extreme weather this week. More than 4,800 flights have been canceled. Schools are closed. Mail delivery is suspended. Blood drives are called off. And in Chicago, commuter train service is setting tracks on fire for safety. Remember this? It was July of 2017 when Donald Trump made this grand pronouncement.
Foxconn will invest in southeast Wisconsin while a larger facility is constructed over the coming years. And that facility will be about the biggest there is anywhere. The company's initial investment of more than $10 billion will create up to 13,000 jobs in the very near future.
Well, like everything else Trump has promised, this one's not happening either. Despite $4 billion in tax breaks in exchange for a promise to build flat screen panels at a Wisconsin plant and hire up to 13,000 workers, the electronics manufacturer is changing its plans. Foxconn says it can't compete with lower cost flat panel plants elsewhere in the world, so it's going to create a technology hub in Wisconsin instead of a factory. 3/4 of the jobs will be in research, development, and design rather than the blue-collar manufacturing jobs Trump promised when the deal was announced. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
All right. Now, before we bring Howie Klein on, there's one more thing that I didn't get until until after I produced What's News this morning. Apparently, Sarah Sanders, daughter of Mike Huckabee. I'm sorry, I don't use the Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Her name is Sarah Sanders. She chose to take her husband's name. That's her fucking name. She did an interview on the Christian Broadcasting Network where she actually said this.
I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times. And I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there. And I think he has done a tremendous job in supporting a lot of the things that people of faith really care about.
Oh, really? Do you now, Sarah Sanders? You know, I know I've been a bit harsh lately, so I found a kinder, gentler way to say. Thank you very, very much. Oh, I thought I put more because we hate what you do and the things that you do or however it goes. Lily Allen, fuck you very, very much. Sarah Sanders, shut up. Oh my God. All right, let's get Howie Klein on the line, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Okay. Hi, Howie Klein. Howie? Oh, don't tell me. I don't know if Howie, let's see. Knowing the way things are going for me, it's my phone. I'm going to try calling Howie back again. Let's see if this works. God damn it. Knowing me, it's my equipment here that it's Skype has been screwing up on me lately. Come on. Settings. Let's try this. Audio. Let's see. Hello? Hello? I'm getting absolutely nothing. Howie, are you there? Okay. While I try to figure this out, we'll take another little break because I'm having one of those days. Maybe I just shouldn't have done a show today either. All right. Sorry about that. Hopefully we'll get Howie Klein on the line while I figure this out. Don't go away. I will try to be right back.
How many lies does Donald Trump utter per day? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. A fitting epitaph for the tombstone of our present president would be, "Here lies Donald Trump. Still lying." Never has one president hurl such big lies with such force in such a short time. The Washington Post keeps count, reporting that so far in his first 738 days in office, Trump has uttered more than 8,158 falsehoods, averaging more than 11 a day. Check out some on his favorite topic, the wall. The U.S. is being invaded by dangerous aliens crossing the Mexican border illegally and creating a national security crisis, he screeches. Facts. Illegal immigration across the border is at a 50-year low. The migrants now crossing are mostly Central American women and children fleeing abuse, repression, and abject poverty back home, and they're legally seeking asylum here. Still, Trump recently flew to the border city of McAllen, Texas, to dramatize the need for a big, beautiful wall, to cut the crime rate and stop heroin from entering. Facts. Today's crime rate in McAllen is the lowest in 34 years, and Trump's own drug agency reports that nearly all heroin enters by smuggling it in trucks, etc., that go right through inspection stations. A wall won't stop that. But, he declared, Mexico is going to pay for the wall. Fact. Not a prayer. So the Donald now claims, obviously I never said this, and I never meant they're going to write out a check. Fact. He did say just that, many times. So he's lately been trying a double backflip lie, claiming that his new NAFTA deal with Mexico requires it to pay up. Fact. No such language exists. And if it did, why would he still be demanding that you and I pay for his boondoggle? This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not simply that Trump lies, but that his presidency is a lie, dependent on his self-deceptions and his pitiful attempts to deceive us.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
You're listening to The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. I think I figured it out. And, of course, it was the settings on my computer that miraculously just reset themselves. So, hopefully, Howie will be there this time. He was probably there before.
Hi, do I get to hear the Chuck Schumer again?
No, I'm not going to play it again because I had to waste so much time figuring out the settings on my computer. I'm just teasing.
I heard it last time. So I heard everything you said, and I guess you just didn't hear me.
No, I didn't hear you.
I heard you loud and clear.
Okay. Well, hi, Howie Klein.
Hello. And then I talked a little French.
Can you talk a little French?
I can say bonjour.
Oh, bonjour. Bonjour. Mon frère.
A little of the French I spoke. I've been just going insane for the last, like, 20, 30 minutes. When I got up this morning, I didn't recognize a phishing message. It looked like it was an actual thing from AOL telling me I had to change my password.
Oh, no.
So I changed my password, and now it's, you know what that did.
Yes. Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
So now, you know, Russian bots have my everything.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. Yeah, you got to be really careful with that stuff. Anytime I get something, or, you know, usually a good tell is it won't have your name on the email, dear user, or something like that. But, oh, that
no,
sucks.
No, I know. I'm not that stupid. So, no, this was a really, really good little fishing expedition. They really got me.
Oh, God.
And I, you know, I'm very resistant to that kind of stuff, and I usually don't fall for it. I mean, I never fall for it, but I did this time. It was so perfect with AOL. Everything was just exactly right. And
So how do you, I mean, what, how can you fix it? Obviously you changed the password again.
I fixed it going forward. Who knows what's going to happen next? Probably the FBI will come barging in any minute now and drag me away.
Yeah, you'll get a Roger Stone style.
Yeah,
I hope so. It's been a crazy week. From the, you know, the whole Howard Schultz rollout. And do you understand why people are so freaked out about him? I mean, I watched him. He did the whole, you know, go-round on TV. He's got the charisma of a doornail.
Well, but he's also got $3.3 billion, and that's the entire reason that there's any kind of freak out at all. In other words, if he were just, you know, just some guy, no one would care.
Right.
But because he's got all that money and seems to be willing to use it in this silly campaign, you know, all this is like some, you know, really the sleaziest of campaign operatives. Just seeing a way to make a quick buck off this guy. I mean, they're going to get a fortune. This Steve Schultz and the other guy, Burton.
Yeah, Bill Burton and Steve Schmidt, right?
Famous campaign lowlifes, and he's going to pay them hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more.
Yep.
And you know, they're just telling him he can win and you know, one of the things I warned my readers about in the case of Schultz. Is MSNBC was making you into a hero.
Yeah.
Because he's very, very witty. He's a smart, funny guy and hates Trump.
Right.
So they'd have him on every day.
Oh, Steve Schmidt you're talking about. Steve Schmidt, not Schultz. Right.
Sorry?
Yeah, Steve Schmidt you're talking about here, not Howard Schultz.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm talking about Steve Schmidt works for Steve Schultz.
I was wondering. You were saying he was funny.
Schmidt was on MSNBC, constantly.
Yeah.
Putting down Trump in the most witty and hilarious way, so everybody loved him, including me.
Yep.
I mean, he was so great the way he would just go after Trump in no uncertain terms. But what I was warning my readers about is that he also would go after Bernie in the same way.
That's right.
Because he hates progressives.
That's right.
And doesn't understand. I mean, yes, he hates Trump, but that doesn't make someone any good. Any normal person would hate Trump. And it's entertaining to see Schmidt do it, but he is not. He's the opposite of a progressive. He's a conservative Republican, and you know, to him, the worst thing that could happen would be someone like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or Jeff Merkley or
Marianne Williamson,
or any of those any progressive. Getting in, you know, he loves someone like like Schultz, because right. that Schultz is a conservative. So anyway, he has now got Schultz, doing a campaign that's based on tearing down progressives. I mean, why is Schultz spending his campaign attacking AOC?
Right.
It just doesn't. It's idiotic.
It is idiotic. And there's all those tells. First of all, he calls it the Democrat Party. He's attacking progressives. I gotta hand it to Nicole Wallace, who I've grown to actually like a bit. Because yesterday she apparently went off on Steve Schmidt, and then she invited, Chuck Todd to, pile on after her to go after him because
good.
Yeah, and today he was fired from his role as a contributor at MSNBC.
Oh, excellent. Oh, yeah. I was wondering, I knew that had to happen.
Yep.
I just, was wondering how long they were going to take.
Yeah, it happened today. I got to ask you about this one, because out of all the things I've ever retweeted, this one got the most retweets on its own.
Thing about Guster?
Not the thing about Guster. This was from a day or two ago, a guy named Scott Wong. Scott Wong, D.C., he's a reporter for The Hill. And he tweeted, my latest, some Dems want to turn the tables on AOC, trying to plot a primary challenge against the rising Democratic star and social media sensation. Quote, what I have recommended to the New York delegation is that you find AOC a primary opponent and make her a one-term congressman. End quote. A veteran Democratic lawmaker told me, you've got numerous council people and state legislators who've been waiting 20 years for that seat. So I tweeted to him and I asked, I'm guessing that it wasn't off the record. Why don't you tell us who this was? And to no answer, but that response to him asking who this veteran Democratic lawmaker was got like thousands of retweets. I mean, I've never seen it so busy. A lot of people are really pissed off about this. I could see if it was in an off the record conversation, but it
may have been.
It may have been.
I read it too, and I wrote a post about it. And I kind of like Wong. He's okay for a reporter.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of decided to handle it in a humorous way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'll remember in Wong's article, towards the very end, he starts talking about Pete Aguilar. So
right.
Pete Aguilar is a conservative Democrat from Southern California. He's just awful. I mean, and when he was first running, there was a lot of question of if he was really a Democrat or not. There was certainly a lot of question about how incredibly this is before he was even in Congress, how incredibly corrupt he is. A friend of mine took this incredible, fabulous picture of him when he was coked out of his mind, like just completely so coked up it was beyond belief, holding some whiskey in his hand and drinking. So he was both drunk
and
flipped out on coke and giving everybody the finger. And his friend, who was in the same condition as him, also was giving everyone the finger. It's a great picture. And I used it, with a wonderful caption saying, the honorable representative Pete Aguilar. But my story was about how, why isn't Pete Aguilar, who hates Alexandria and was part of that story, whether he was the actual person who Wong talked about as the person who said she should be primary, he doesn't give that away, but he may have been. And if he didn't say it, it's something he would have said, and certainly one of his friends would said. And so I suggested that that he move to New York, move from the Inland Empire to the Bronx, and run against Ocasio.
Right.
I'm sure he would get 15 or 20% of the vote, and it would further increase her fame. I mean, he's the example of the worst possible kind of Democrat that you could have. He's just in there because there's nothing else he could do with his life. He's a miserable nothing, and he's done nothing since he's gotten elected to Congress, and he'll never do anything for as long as he's in Congress.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of people sort of that fit that description.
How about Most of them.
Most of them. Exactly. And in fact, and I think the contrast is so stark because you've got a bunch of young freshmen who are go-getters, who aren't going to sit back and be the lumps on the log that so many of them are, that they're actually going to go and do the work that they were elected to do. And you have a post up from yesterday, which happened to be FDR's 137th birthday. And you noted that the Ways and Means Social Security Subcommittee Chairman John Larson introduced the Social Security 2100 Act, which you say would be the most significant update to Social Security since 1983, meant to increase benefits and strengthen the trust fund. And you mentioned there are 203 co-sponsors, not one single Republican. And a bunch of Democrats, interestingly enough, didn't sign on to it either.
But, you know, it's not a coincidence which Democrats they are. And that was that's the point I was trying to make in the story. It, again, the Republican wing of the Democratic Party, the Blue Dogs, the New Dems, you know, some of those freshmen, the,
yep.
you know, not the good ones, the
no.
bad ones.
Yep.
They refused to sign on. Now, if you don't favor expanding Social Security, and if you don't favor raising the minimum wage, and if you don't favor dealing with climate change, why the hell are you a Democrat?
Well,
why would you even be a Democrat? It doesn't make any sense to me. Is it because your parents were Democrats? Does it go back to that? Is it because your district is all Democratic? In some of these cases, that's not even the case. Why are you a Democrat if you don't support Democratic ideals and Democratic values and Democratic policy? What the hell is it? I mean, there are plenty of Democrats who do. You keep hearing someone like Howard Schultz, to bring him up again, saying, you know, how, you know, the Democratic position is Medicare for all. Well, I wish it was.
Yeah.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It is for progressives, but there are loads of Democrats who do not support Medicare for all in Congress, who won't sign on to it and who are opposed to it. And, you know, and you've got people running as Democrats, supposedly, like I don't know if he hasn't declared he's running yet, except everyone he speaks to, not in public, but Michael Bloomberg is running as a Democrat. And he has been running around and bad-mouthing Medicare for all and saying the worst possible stuff, just showing that he doesn't understand anything about government. You know, he says, well, how are you going to pay for it? You know, that old canard. Are these people Democrats?
Yeah,
I
don't know either.
But it's important to name them, and it's important for people to know. I mean, I constantly hear from, you know, sincere, if misguided, activists, you know, Democrats, you know, good people who, you know, they didn't have a choice after the primary in their district, or if there even was a primary. You know, look at this choice. Who would you pick? Abigail Spanberger,
right?
Or Dave Brat? That was only choice you had.
Right.
Dave Brat, one of the worst Republicans in the history of contemporary Congress. And then the alternative was a Democrat, calling herself a Democrat, named Abigail Spanberger.
Mm-hmm.
And now, she's horrible. She is so horrible. There's no words to describe it. I mean, she put up an ad on TV for herself that was as bad as anything Trump would do, you know, scaring people about immigrants.
Wow.
What the hell? And then she joins the Blue Dogs.
Of course.
And she's already making herself into one of the worst possible Democrats. But for the people who helped to elect her, what they were really doing was getting rid of Brat.
Right.
And getting rid of Brat is a really admirable thing to do. But
right.
Now they're stuck with this Abigail Spanberger. And, I'm just mentioning her, but there are 20 others like her.
And you know, Kyrsten Sinema in the Senate, who
Did you see those boots?
I saw the thigh-high boots yesterday. I got to give her credit for shaking things up.
The guy I know is just, like, so in love with her now.
Yeah.
I mean, I had this one friend of mine, I'm embarrassed to even, I'm not going to go into the details,
okay.
But he called up with this fantasy of Alexandria Ocasio and Kyrsten Sinema and himself.
Oh, my God.
So let's leave it at that.
I don't even want to go there. Oh, my God.
You don't.
No, no. But she's already, I forget now what it was, but she took a stand, like a bullshit stance with the Republicans on already. I mean, she's showing her true colors really quickly. So this is going
on. She showed them in the House. I mean, she was, no matter how, if you have a million people or you have 10 people, no matter how many people you have, there's got to be one that's the worst. She was the worst Democrat in the House. She had the worst voting record. She voted with the Republicans more than anybody else. She voted against progressive initiatives more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. She was the chairman of the Blue Dogs. She was the single worst Democrat in the House. And now, not despite that, but because of that, Schumer has made her into a U.S. senator.
It's unbelievable, which blows my mind. Schumer actually did something right this week, and I don't know if it was his decision, but naming Stacey Abrams to deliver the response to the State of the Union address. So,
told me his office gets up and this sounds so insane. He and I went to high school together.
Yes,
we both went to James Madison after Bernie had graduated,
mm-hmm.
and. There's someone in his office every day that checks my blog to see what I've written about him. and I had talked about how amazing Stacey was and how she'd make a great
running mate
for Bernie.
Right, I agree.
And someone called me and said, I think Schumer saw what you said. And then the next day asked, and it was Schumer, Schumer and Pelosi,
right.
Gave her the that speaking gig. I'm sure it had nothing to do with me. I'm just sort of joking around about
right,
that, but that's what someone told me the other day.
Well, it makes sense to me. I got to ask you about somebody that we know and love, and I'm disconcerted about, if that's the word, all the vitriol on the left. People are still announcing their candidacy. Not everybody has jumped in yet. We're still almost 2 years away from the election. I think it's early to go all in on somebody. I've also chastised some of the people on Twitter who've come at me. For instance, anytime I post something nice about Bernie Sanders, I seem to get attacked, even from people who call themselves Democrats or progressives. And so I wonder why people are already coming out making endorsements. And the big one that has me questioning it.
I still love no matter what you're going to say.
I know. I still love Ted Lieu as well, but why did he endorse Kamala Harris already? I mean, it's one thing to say I really like her, she's good, but, you know, let's wait till we get a little closer to make official endorsements.
Well, I mean, I agree. I spent a week trying to talk him out of it. I failed. So Ted had a few reasons for endorsing her that I know of. There may have been others, but what I know of is one of the things that's really near and dear to Ted's heart from when he was in the state legislature and that he's been working on for a very, very long time, and that's extremely difficult, although now it's becoming a little bit more acceptable. When he first started talking about it, it was considered like really crazy, and it was like, oh God, this Ted was some insane thing. Now it's, you know, now it's considered mainstream, but it's still hard to pass, and that is getting rid of the whole idea of cash bail.
Mm, right.
I mean, a lot of people don't know what that is, and it's room for another story. It's not this story, but that he worked with her on that, and they worked very, very closely together, and he got to know her really well. So, you know, look, like I said, I spent a week trying to talk him out of it, and it went nowhere. But he has reasons, his own reasons. Oh, people always have their own reasons, whether it's a personal relationship or some, you know, in this case, it's an issue that's really, really important to him that most of us have probably never thought much about.
Sure.
And he worked with her on that issue. So,
okay. You
know, he went and did what he thought was the right thing to do.
I just thought it was weird coming from him because he seemed to be, at least during the midterms, against the party interfering in the primary. Now, I know this is his personal endorsement, and he said she's an old friend and they go back a long way, and I didn't realize about the cash bail issue, but that is a big issue. It's why poor people languish in prison, and somebody like fucking Roger Stone gets out, not by paying $250,000 bond, as they were reporting on the news, but it was a signature bond. He signed in lieu of $250,000, which I think is ridiculous. But, you know, someone in my financial position would never be given that opportunity. I'd be sitting in jail. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, when Ted started working on this issue, it was really considered like way out in left field. Like nobody would take it seriously. And she took it seriously. And he's very grateful to her for having done that. I'm not trying to defend him, and I'm not, although it sounds that way. And like I said, I disagree with him on that, but that's the way it goes.
Right.
You know, he's got his own way of looking at it. You know, I'm pissed off because now I can't attack other people who come in and endorse her.
But what I find fascinating is how all in the media, the corporate mainstream media, seems to be on her. MSNBC loves Kamala Harris. CNN seems to love Kamala Harris. The papers, and yet there's other people. For instance, you mentioned Marianne Williamson. Now I know she's not a top tier candidate, but if you blinked,
why is that?
Well, I mean, in terms of
Talk about why she's not a top candidate.
In terms of, you know, she's not a sitting senator. She doesn't hold public office. She's not somebody whose name is out there every
day. So not a sitting senator. Mm-hmm. That would be, that in my mind, that
that could be a plus.
There's a good reason why someone should be a top tier candidate. Mm-hmm. It's the sitting senators who have gotten us in the bad situations that we're in now.
Yep.
It's the sitting senators who have helped create a system where we have Donald Trump as president.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And the guy that I asked you about last week, Andrew Yang, who was on the show with me last Friday, who's a fascinating guy. He's got, you know, and on a lot of the charts you see, the flow charts of who's already announced, he's not even on there. I don't know if Marianne is making that cut either.
No. In fact, I saw him the other day on one that I used.
Oh, did you?
And not her.
Wow.
Although today, you know, now that she's finally announced on Monday, today CNN had her on, and they did a very, very good interview with her.
Did they? Okay.
And they took her, you know, it seemed that the guy was taking it seriously. And she, you know, got an opportunity to present herself as a serious candidate. Now, any progressive who wants to just dismiss her out of hand because she's not a politician,
mm-hmm.
should go and read her, go to her website and read her very, very, very detailed platform. She has the best platform of anybody running.
Hmm. Is it MarianneWilliamson.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
Her platform is unbelievable. And now, you know, so when people who make fun of her to me, when I tell them that, then and I get them to actually read her platform, they agree that it's an incredible platform, and then they dismiss it and say, oh, it's just Bernie. It's just a bunch of Bernies.
Oh, God.
But it's certainly not. I mean, it comes out at the end of being just a bunch of Bernie stuff, but she talks about her own reasons for how and her own perspective on this stuff. And that's what's so bad. Do I think she's going to become president? No, I do not.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think Trump would be either.
No.
But the point is that she's bringing an incredible different way of looking at things. You know, I mean, I'm a Bernie guy. I don't hide it. Everyone knows who reads my blog knows that I'm, you know, for Bernie, that I'm raising money for Bernie, that Bernie is the candidate that I will be voting for. But Marianne is talking about things from a different way. She comes to the same conclusion as Bernie, but she reaches the conclusion from a different perspective. And it's a perspective that's worth considering and worth thinking about. I'm not advocating anyone vote for her. I hope people do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what I'm advocating. I'm advocating just listening to where she's coming from, because it's going to appeal to people who are turned off to politics. You know, millions and millions of Americans don't vote. I think a lot of those people are going to wind up voting for her.
Hmm.
You know, she has the biggest of any of the announced candidates. She has the biggest social media presence.
Oh, I'll bet.
What do you think?
That's
why it's so funny when people say that, you know, she's not a serious candidate.
Right, right.
She's the biggest social media presence than any of them. I mean, Bernie's not an announced candidate, so he has a bigger social media presence. But other than him, there's no one. And she has sold millions and millions of books,
right.
And not just a book that someone puts on a shelf or gives away to a friend. When I was just getting to know her, it was quite a few years ago, I mentioned something to my neighbors about her, the guys who lived across the street, and they both started crying.
Hmm.
And they said, she saved their lives.
Wow.
And they had never met her. They're talking about her writing saved their life.
Right. Well, she did the whole work in the Course in Miracles, and she comes from a very spiritual place. And she's fascinating. And I'm at the point, I believe this is when, you know, we hear from everybody. Primaries are the best time of the political season, and I just worry that it's getting so ugly so early. We got a long way to go. So, glad to hear your thoughts on it. Howie Klein, as always, it's always great to talk with you. Find Howie, as always, at downwithtyranny.com and, of course, the Blue America Pack. I'll put links to both on my blog at NicoleSandler.com. Thank you, Howie. I'll talk to you next week.
Good talk to you, Nicole.
You too.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow with Digby.